Support for the Exchange podcast from NHPR comes from you, our subscribers,
and from the law firm of Primer, Piper, Eggleston, and Kramer, providing comprehensive legal counsel to New Hampshire businesses and their owners for more than 30 years. For more information or to speak to an attorney, visit primer.com. And from the New Hampshire Department of Agriculture, Markets, and Food. New Hampshire's farms and farmers markets are full of fresh goods, rich with agricultural heritage, and available all year long. You can locate pick-your-own-farms, farmers markets, fairs, and more near you using the directories at visitnh.gov/agriculture.
From New Hampshire Public Radio, I'm Laura Kanoy, and this is The Exchange. Many old church buildings grace New Hampshire's town greens and city neighborhoods, but as church attendance declines, what should be done with these structures when they're no longer used as houses of worship or when it's too expensive to maintain them? That's a discussion going on statewide and especially right now in Laconia, where an elegant Catholic church one person described as our own Notre Dame may be slated for demolition. Today in The Exchange, new questions around old churches. Let's hear from you. Our email, exchange@nhpr.org. Once again, exchange@nhpr.org. Use Facebook or Twitter at NHPR Exchange, or give us a call, 1-800-892-6477. We have three guests for the hour. Father George Dallaire is here, Vicar for Canonical Affairs at the Roman Catholic Diocese of Manchester. And Father Dallaire, it's been a while. It's nice to see you. Welcome back.
Good to see you, Ben.
Also with us, Tom Mays, Vice President and Senior Counsel at the National Trust for Historic Preservation, author of the book, Why Do Old Places Matter? And Tom Mays, welcome to the show and welcome to New Hampshire.
Thank you. Very happy to be here.
And also with us, Andrew Cushing, Field Service Representative for the New Hampshire Preservation Alliance. And Andrew, good to meet you. Thank you for your time as well.
It's nice to be wearing matching headsets with everyone.
Well, and Tom, I want to start with you, but hear from everybody. You care about old buildings, obviously. You've been at the Preservation Alliance for a long time. What is unique, Tom, about a church as a structure?
Thank you, Laura. Well, I'm with the National Trust for Historic Preservation, and I wrote this book called Why Old Places Matter to really try to get to the heart of why old places matter so much to people. And of course, the thing about churches that's really special is that they serve as sort of astonishing landmarks in every community, and they embed people's memories. They all have memories of their christenings, their weddings, their funerals, all the key important moments in people's lives. But they also are places of beauty and of architectural significance. And one of the reasons I think it's so important for them to be reused and saved is because they continue to have those functions of memory and identity and continuity even when they're no longer in a religious use. So I am always trying to encourage communities to find ways to save them and look for creative opportunities to do that. And I'm looking forward to hearing what other people have to say about that today. I think perhaps nothing illustrates the importance of these places to us more vividly than how people felt when they saw the flames shooting out of Notre Dame Cathedral. And there, you know, when we all watched that happen in real time on the news, people felt a profound sense of loss, a sort of collective loss from this highly important place, this iconic place, not only for the people of Paris or France, but for people all over the world. And those are the functions that the churches in our community play also, that they are the icons of every community where we center our sense of identity and memory.
Well, it's interesting you mentioned Notre Dame. And Father Dallaire, I'd love your thoughts, too, when Notre Dame was burning in Paris. Tom's right. Many people were devastated around the world, and not just Catholics, not just Parisians. What does that say to you about churches, especially these elegant, old, beautiful churches, as sacred spaces?
Well, for one, I was born and raised in Paris, so I lived there for 17 years.
I did not know that.
I know Notre Dame rather well and visited it often. So, yes, it was an absolute tragedy. to watch it go down in flames. There's no question that churches, but other buildings as well, start to take on a specific character in the identity of a society, whether it is because of what they represent from a matter of faith, but also, generally speaking, because they are architectural structures that bring significance and, again, character to an area. So when we see something as significant as Notre Dame being destroyed by flames, it becomes a reminder to all of us that these buildings have identities.
All of us, even non-Catholics.
Well, absolutely. Well, something like a building like Notre Dame has a cultural, it's part of the cultural fiber of France. So way beyond the faith, the history, the age, the architecture, the style, all that has happened in those walls.
And that's why we're talking about how difficult it is when these churches in New Hampshire, you know, empty out, not as many people go, they're hard to keep up, they're hard to heat, they're hard to cool, and yet it's devastating for people when these are torn down or adapted for reuse. Did you want to say anything else there, Father DeLay?
Well, just to add that those buildings that are significant, culturally speaking, such as Notre Dame, affect all those who have gone to see it, tourists of all faith, people of all countries, of all ages. So, yes, it does affect us. And one of the realities about churches, quite frankly, which is beyond the Catholic Church, any people of faith understands, I think, their relationship of faith expressed most often out of vulnerability. We turn to God, however one chooses to define God, when we are in need, when we are frail, when we are afraid. So there is a profound vulnerability that ends up being expressed in those buildings as places that we turn to for comfort, for direction, for hope.
Again, it's more than just a building.
It is so much more than just a building.
Andrew, I want to fold you in as well. What comes to mind for you as someone who works on historic preservation here in New Hampshire when you think about the next chapter for a church building? Again, as Father Dallaire said, it's more than just a structure.
Yeah, exactly. So when we have, and certainly in New Hampshire, we're dealing with congregations that are aging, that are dwindling in size. And so I even argue for 100 years, we've been kind of dealing with right-sizing a lot of these churches and congregations. And I'd say half of my field service visits to churches involve very active congregations who are really vested in their building as they have been for generations, and they want to continue stewarding it the best way they can. And I'd say another half are really struggling, and I don't think those are specific to any geographic location in New Hampshire. I've been to some really incredible churches in towns as small as Chatham and Wentworth, but also dealing with churches in Manchester. I think St. Anne's is a great example. So our conversations are always very specific to the congregation and their needs.
And I'm glad you raised that point, Andrew, because I think we'll talk this hour not just about new uses for some of these old churches, but also when you are a steward of an old church and you want to continue using it as a house of worship, how you maybe revamp it for modern times. And there's some issues that come up there, too. So it sounds like you're working on both of those issues.
Absolutely, both.
Yeah. Father DeLair?
And just to add to what Andrew said, the buildings are more than buildings in faith. But the buildings will have a special meaning for those who worship there. So Notre Dame has a meaning which is way beyond the Catholic Church and those who worship there. But there is a special connection as well. When the building becomes the place when one experiences the sacred. And because of that, it becomes a double-edged sword. It's more than a building, but then for some people it also expresses the sacredness of their relationship with God. And so We are often told the church is not the building.
And yet.
But yet.
It sounds
no.
Like,
but,
yeah.
But at the same time, the church is the church from the perspective of faith and community is experienced and centered upon the church where, for Catholics, the Eucharist is celebrated, which is the summit of what we are about. So it's always a difficult balance.
Yeah, it's tricky when these are adapted or, and we'll talk a little bit later, Father Dallaire, the decision-making, when to adapt, when to tear down, when to reuse. Go ahead real quick, Andrew, and then I want to invite our listeners to join us as well.
Sure, I would agree with that. I think that I deal with a lot of congregations that recognize the value of their church and how it's perceived in the community, and they do incredible services, but there is a cost to maintaining these buildings too. And so it's nice when a town, maybe townspeople who don't go to the church recognize it as their town church, but when it comes time to paint it or to fix the steeple or to you know, all the expenses of heating it in the wintertime, money doesn't always follow that incredible burden, but also responsibility that these churches feel for their
spaces. Sure. Something about New England churches, very cold in the wintertime especially, but sometimes in the summer as well. Let's invite our listeners, gentlemen, and then lots more to talk about. Our number here in the exchange for you to join us is 1-800-892-6477. Today in the exchange, preserving and reusing New Hampshire's old churches. Join us with your comments and questions. What's been happening in your community around this? Again, our number, 1-800-892-6477. Send us an email, exchange@nhpr.org. And Phil is calling in from Bartlett. Hi, Phil. You're on the air. Welcome.
Thank you.
Go ahead, Phil.
Oh, I'm sorry. So I'm the president of the Bartlett Historical Society. And we are in the process of trying to raise the funds to save and renovate and reopen a church here in Bartlett. It's the St. Joseph Church, and it was built in 1890. It was closed by the diocese in 1999 and sold to the school district. They basically used the building as a warehouse, as a storage facility, so little maintenance was done on it. Their proposal in 2013 was to tear the building down. And finally, in 2016, after a couple of years of discussion back and forth, the Historical Society signed a lease with them to rent the building. And our whole intent was to save this historic building. It is on the State Register of Historic Places. It's been recognized by the Preservation Alliance as one of the 7 to save buildings. So we've been working, as I say, to get this building back, bring it back in the character of the church, keeping the stained glass windows, for example.
Has it been difficult, Phil, or expensive, or what's how's it been going?
Considering, and Andrew knows this story, we've talked many times about it, this is a very expensive process because the building has been neglected for about 20 years now. We need to start at the roof and work to the basement. There's very little in terms of utilities. For example, we have, I think there's 5 plugs in the building.
And 5 plugs in the whole building.
Right.
Yeah, that doesn't stand up to modern standards where everybody has a laptop and a phone to plug in. And it's so interesting to hear from Phil, Tom. We're getting into specifics now. We've gone from the sacred space down to the electrical plugs. What sorts of issues do come up when a community, a group like Phil's, is trying to readapt an old church building?
Thank you, Laura. Well, one of the things that happens is that first you have to look at what's the condition of the building exactly as they've done. And I think on your website, actually, you posted some materials about what churches can do and what entities that are looking to repurpose historic church buildings can do and how they go through a methodical analysis to determine what are the conditions of the building, what's its significance, how do you think about rehabbing it. And as you're rehabbing it for a different use, often a whole host of code issues come up.
Accessibility, for example.
Accessibility,
parking.
Exactly. And, you know, one of the things that's been interesting to me, I've spoken quite a bit about accessibility, Even though churches were originally excluded from the Americans with Disabilities Act, they have often been at the forefront of providing accessibility.
Sure.
And I personally...
You don't want anybody to be shut out.
Exactly. I'm deeply grateful for that because, you know, my mother was a wheelchair user for the last 10 years of her life, and she wanted to participate in all of those ceremonies and important events just like everyone else and be able to go to weddings. So... So that's all. Things like that are critical issues as you think it through. I am, you know, often disheartened by the neglect or deferred maintenance that church buildings have, and I would strongly encourage churches to look at the deferred maintenance early as it begins to happen, because the longer you wait, the more difficult the problems are.
Sure, with any building, and yet churches have so much financial pressures. I'm sure you know, Tom. So there's the roof that isn't great, but it's not bad. And then there's the, do we want to do more homeless outreach? So it's tricky.
It's very tricky. You know, there are a number of sources of funding for churches, and this doesn't quite respond to the Bartlett situation, where it's the Historical Society doing it. But the National Trust has a fund called the Fund for Sacred Places, which is administered along with Partners for Sacred Places, which is a great national organization that provides advice for congregations that are looking to save their churches. And we provide grant funding and operational support for churches that are trying to figure out ways to save it, and also look at shared uses so that the congregations can find sources of funding and other activities that can happen in the church building or facilities at the same time to try to build support and funding for it.
Sure. All right. Well, Phil, great to hear from you. Very interesting story, and good luck in Bartlett. Let's go to Henniker, where Dave is on the line. Hi, Dave. You're on the air. Welcome.
I wanted to point out the value of older buildings housed over many centuries and build up a sense of community, image, support, and beauty. In Concord, the Catholic churches had to sell off two of three churches in the parish on the west side of the river. One was an old church, very tall, made of stone, beautiful, very visible, right in the center of town. And that one was turned over to a developer who was able to keep the exact exterior image.
Right.
When they turned it into condominiums, and it's beautiful. I used to look at that out my office window, and I'm so glad that it was kept standing. It means a lot to me just as a part of the Concord landscape. When you see it from afar, you see all the towers. But then the second one was a lower-profile church. It was new, relatively new, in the last 50 years. And that's been torn down because it was too small or one story or didn't have the attractiveness to it. For whatever reason, the developer didn't see how they could keep it going. So that's been torn down just a month ago. I used to attend that church, and it is hard to see it being torn down as an attender. But I don't think that there's as much loss in the sense of the community and as part of the city's profile as with that old grand church.
Sure.
That's
and Dave, I'm
looking into the view of it.
I'm familiar with both of those as a Concord resident, and I think his phone quality isn't great. So just to let listeners know, he's right, Father Dallaire. Concord's had two churches repurposed, one of them, condos, a beautiful tall church on Pleasant Street, and then a smaller, less noticeable church over on, I believe it is North State Street, which was torn down. So talking about just the importance of those in the landscape and how those decisions are made, we will pick up on that after a short break. Thank you for the call, Dave. We will also go to Laconia, where there's been a lot going on surrounding a church there, right in the center of town. Beautiful old church. Some concerns that it might be torn down. We will talk about all that after a break, and keep those calls coming. 1-800-892-6477. You can always email us, exchange@nhpr.org.
what does NHPR mean to me?
That's a good question.
I feel when I'm listening to these stories that I'm there, that it's very personal.
It's quality programming that brings so much to my life.
It educates me in a way that no other station does.
I would encourage people to think about the value that NHPR brings into their daily lives.
And if you appreciate NHPR, you should be supporting it.
Support the station that educates and inspires you every day at nhpr.org.
This is The Exchange. I'm Laura Kanoy. Today, what to do with old churches. New Hampshire's landscape includes many old houses of worship, and with declining church attendance, some of these buildings are being adapted for new use. But as we're hearing for the people that love these churches, it can be a difficult subject. And we've been examining the importance of these structures to their communities. Let's hear from you. Send us an email, exchange@nhpr.org. Once again, exchange@nhpr.org. Use Facebook or Twitter. It's NHPR Exchange, or give us a call, 1-800-892-6477. With us now on the line is Adam Drapcho. He's a reporter with Laconia Daily Sun. He's been covering a story there around the sale of a Catholic church in town. And Adam, really nice to have you. Thank you for your time.
Thank you for having me.
So what was the physical presence of the Catholic Church in Laconia when it was at its peak, Adam? How much property are we talking about?
Well, as recently as 2011, there were three Catholic churches in Laconia, as well as a seasonal chapel at the Weirs. And then, of course, there was a Holy Trinity Catholic school.
So a lot of property, sounds like. School buildings,
yeah,
churches,
yeah.
Parking lots. When and why did the diocese decide to consolidate, Adam?
The three parishes were consolidated in 2008. At the time, there was decreasing parishioners, as well as a shortage of priests. Those were given as the explanation. However, the services continued in all three churches until 2011, when actually the first of the three churches was put on the market.
So what's happening now with St. Joseph's Church? When did the community find out that that was going to be perhaps demolished?
They found that out on May 5th when they attended their Sunday Mass. And it's been shocking, really, to a lot of people. Even though for 2.5 years they've known that the parishes would all be consolidated onto the Sacred Heart campus. However, they were told at that time that the property would be put on the market for 6 months, and then if it didn't sell, that it would be demolished. And because they were waiting to transfer the Holy Trinity Catholic School to the Sacred Heart campus, the property was never actually put on the market. So this purchase and sale agreement came as a surprise to everyone and a big shock that they were going to see the church torn down.
Well, and you've certainly written about the reaction of parishioners and how upset they are. But what about others in the communities who may not attend Catholic Church? What's been the reaction more broadly in Laconia, Adam?
A lot of shock, really. It's a lot of people consider it to be the most attractive building in the city. Some people even call it our Notre Dame. And it really strikes a sensitive nerve in Laconia because the city lost a lot of historic buildings about 50 years ago when there was a massive downtown renovation project that went underway. And people wring their hands about that project today and consider it to be a loss of a lot of historic architecture. And the buildings that replaced it are not really that attractive. So people are really worried that this is going to be more of the same.
Wow. Okay, so striking a special nerve in Laconia, people are saying, let's not make this mistake again.
Right.
How much are local Catholics or Laconia residents in general trying to convince the bishop to change his mind?
There is a vigorous letter-writing campaign to the bishop. There is a canonical law offers an official appeal process for parishioners to appeal a bishop's decision such as this. And we do understand that many people have been writing letters to the bishop, both parishioners and non-parishioners. However, we haven't gotten any indication from the diocese that the bishop is likely to reconsider.
Okay, and we have a representative from the diocese on our panel today, so we'll go to him in a moment. But just a few more questions for you, please, Adam. I understand from your reporting that the church occupies a major corner in Laconia, so it's an important spot. People don't want just anything to go there.
Right.
Is there any idea what might go there if this church is indeed torn down?
No idea.
That's the mystery.
I'd have a major scoop if I knew. there's been rumors from everything from a Walmart to a drug rehab center. It's right next to the public library. It's right across from the from a big post office. So it definitely is a high-profile corner. And, yeah, I'd love to know.
What does it look like, Adam?
Well, it's a really striking building. The exterior walls are made of a gray stone, and it has a slate roof. The interior is also very beautiful, light-colored walls contrasted by dark woodwork and some very colorful stained glass. And another really interesting feature about this church, you know, it's been used for masses for 90 years. As soon as you walk inside, you can smell the incense that has kind of permeated the building. Really gives it a sense of place.
Wow. Anything else that you are going to be looking at as this story moves forward, Adam? It's going to keep you busy.
Yes, it sure will. Once that appeals process has concluded, we'll get a date for the final mass there. And then after that will be the demolition, unless something changes. And then, of course, love to know what is going to take its place.
Okay. Adam, thank you very much. We really appreciate it.
My pleasure. Thanks.
That's Adam Drapchow, reporter for the Laconia Daily Sun. One more time, the number for you to join us, 1-800-892-6477. Email exchange@nhpr.org. And all of you, Paula sent an email that kind of reflects some of the themes that Adam brought up, so I'll share it with you. Paula says, what hasn't been said yet is that the diocese owns the churches, not the parishes. Those who make the decisions about what to do with an individual church don't have the same level of emotion attached to as the parishioners and the community do. Money talks too, Paula says. The public is up in arms in Laconia about losing St. Joseph's Church, but it is too late. Rather than working with the public, the diocese decided this on its own and simply announced its decision. So, Father Dallaire, I do have to ask you, how are these decisions made by the diocese? And it is the diocese, it is the bishop's decision. It's not really up to the locals, is it?
What happens to a consecrated building such as a church, which would be different than a church building such as schools or rectories or centers?
Oh, those are different. Okay.
Those would be considered different. So there is a formal process, but just to clarify on the author of the email, the churches actually do belong to the parishes. The churches are part of the patrimony of the parishes, and that is an extra element that one has to keep in consideration, because that patrimony, as Tom was saying before, if there is disrepair and whatever else, the worth of that patrimony, therefore the sustainability of living out the mission of the church of proclaiming the good news, becomes affected at quite a detriment. So, no, the Diocese of Manchester, the church does not own St. Joseph. Should St. Joseph's parish or the campus be sold, every single penny goes to the parish community.
The locals.
Exactly.
So whose decision is it, though, to let this building stand or tear it down?
So years ago, I want to say maybe started in about in 2015 or 2016, the pastor of that parish approached the community, used the tools available to him from the perspective of the councils that are there to assist him, the pastoral council, the finance council, and in looking at the overall picture, because St. Joseph's Parish was being merged or with Sacred Heart Parish and became St. André-Bessette Parish. It was established that due to diminishing numbers, due to whether of parishioners and income, clergy, it was just not viable to keep two worship spaces
Sure, it's
going.
Expensive to keep those buildings going.
So the decision was reached by the community in 2017, I want to say, that the property would, the community would ask the Bishop of Manchester if it could sell the campus. Then there's
the St. Joseph's
the
campus.
The St. Joseph campus, yes, thank you. Then there's an evaluatory process, engineering reviews. Then it goes to committees and councils at the diocesan level. And after that, it goes to the Council of Priests and to the College of Consultors, which is the closest group to the bishop, to establish whether or not, yes, indeed, permission will be granted for the sale, for alienation. Once alienation, permission for alienation is granted, then there are all sorts of procedures as well.
Sure.
That need to be followed, such as getting estimates. What does the property, what is the value of the property?
So I understand that there's a process and a lot of involvement at the local level and then going up the food chain. But I'm not clear still, Father Dallaire, please, on whose decision it is. Ultimately, this building will be preserved or be torn down. I'm still not clear on who decides
so
that.
So once a building is listed for sale, then hopefully conversation and negotiation with a potential buyer establishes what does the new owner wish to use the building for. What is the intended use? And that is where it becomes a little bit more complicated because we cannot have the use of a building that is going to be contradictory to the morals of the church or to just the proper order of society.
And I have read that there are considerations about these uses feel appropriate. A charitable use, for example, another Christian congregation would be okay, but then other uses that would be feel inappropriate to Catholic teaching would not be allowed.
Just as was mentioned, I think, by Andrew and by you, Laura, Sacred Heart Church here in Concord, the buyer had a plan for the building that was going to be consistent with what we believe to be protecting the identity of that building. And so Sacred Heart was reconfigured to now be condominiums. That same developer purchased the property of St. Peter's and is raising that building because for his purpose, nothing could be used. There was no use for that building.
And that was the caller who called earlier from Henniker, who was concerned about that and wondering how those decisions were made. So I think that answers his question to some extent, Father Dallaire. You look like you want to say one more thing.
Ultimately, the bishop has the responsibility to decide whether or not a proposed usage is acceptable or not. So therefore, whether he will decide that raising the church is necessary.
Okay. Let's go back to our listeners. And Andrew is calling from Laconia. Hi, Andrew. Go ahead. You're on the air. Welcome.
Thanks, Laura. And what concerns me about what's been going on here certainly is demolishing this church is really left the city of Laconia heartbroken. And I think that it's not just those that look at it as a sacred space, Catholics who have worshiped there. I myself have had all my children baptized there. But I also think it's those in the community that look at the architectural significance of this church in downtown Laconia. And I think what has to be made clear, and with all due respect to Father, this church is scheduled to be demolished before the property is actually sold, which this just goes to the lack of transparency as to this whole transaction, which has left people with so many questions and certainly added to the heartbreak of potentially losing this church structure in the city.
Well, Andrew, if I could ask you a quick question. I read in the Laconia Daily Sun just this morning that city councilors agreed on Tuesday to consider establishing a historic district commission to protect some of the oldest structures in the area, including St. Joseph's Church. Have you been involved in that?
I have been involved in it, and I sit on the committee that's going to be looking into that on Monday. Because I think that if this church is to be demolished by the diocese, it will leave a gaping wound in our community. And as Father said earlier in the conversation here, many of us who in times of trouble look to God and look to church to seek some salvation and some strength, every time we drive by that property, when the church is no longer there, it's going to hurt significantly for all of us.
You feel that spiritual lack. Yeah. Andrew, I'm going to let you go. Something you said reminds me of something earlier that our reporter, Adam Drapcho, said. And I want to ask you, Tom. He talked about how, you know, not only is the church beautiful, not only is there a spiritual connection that our caller Andrew mentions, but it sounds like Laconia made some mistakes earlier, 50 years ago, and now people are saying, whoa, whoa, don't touch it. I wonder how often you see this cycle, Tom. You know, 40, 50, 60 years ago, people say, tear it all down. And then 40, 50, 60 years later, people say, ooh, big mistake.
Great. Well, thank you, Laura. You know, I've heard this phrase said that preservationists are the only people in the world who are never proven wrong.
Never?
Never. Saving a building is almost always the right thing to do. It provides so many benefits for the community. And of course, you know, I don't remember Penn Station in New York, yet many of us still feel the loss of that station. That's a palpable sense of grief. And this grief reaction that the caller described is exactly what people feel when a treasured building is lost. Sometimes that grief reaction goes on for years and years and years. We all are still living with the long tail of urban renewal and the mistakes that were made in urban renewal in that era. Many of us miss the churches that were replaced. I did want to come back to this issue about the church that was relatively newer, that was
here
also
in Concord.
Lost.
Yes, it wasn't. How do I say it nicely? Because people love that church. It just wasn't as interesting to look at as the other church that was preserved on Pleasant Street.
Sure. Well. First, you know, it's always
interesting is in the eye of the beholder.
Exactly,
I accept that.
But it's always harder to save an ugly building than it is to save a pretty one. But you know, one of the things I wrote about in my book was the idea that it really only takes about 40 or 50 years for people to feel this sense of attachment with places. So I encourage communities to pay attention to more recent structures as well as older structures.
What do you think about this sentiment, Andrew, that we heard from Adam in Laconia? People made a mistake, they regret it, so now they're trying extra hard to preserve this church. I wonder how often you hear that as you work with communities here in the Granite State.
I hear it a lot, and I think the problem that the Preservation Alliance deals with is coming into the communities where maybe for decades, in the case of Laconia, they've had historic district commissions being proposed since the 80s with plans about boundaries, and it's more difficult to come into a community when there's a timeline and a pretty quick turnaround for a decision. Sometimes
so establishing a historic district is more complicated than it sounds.
I think there are hoops to jump through, but it's sometimes very effective to have something like the demolition of St. Joseph's compel people to really step forward and say, let's get this done now. Because otherwise, demolition is forever, and it's tough to let those wounds heal.
Do developers sometimes look askance at historic districts, Andrew? Because then if they want to redevelop, they're going to have to go through extra rules and regulations, so to speak.
I think there are a lot of misconceptions about historic districts in New Hampshire, but really, ultimately, they are responsible for saving our state's most treasured villages. And if we want to manage growth and see the communities that we advertise in New Hampshire, everywhere, on our postcards and our calendars, then we need to save what's special to us.
Yeah, we're not putting Walmart and shopping centers on our postcards, are we? We're putting those beautiful town
greens. Or Dollar General,
yeah. All right. Well, a lot more after a short break, and we have tons of listeners who want to jump in to our conversation. So we will go back to you in just a moment. Our number, 1-800-892-6477. Email exchange@nhpr.org. We'll be right back. This is The Exchange. I'm Laura Kanoy. Tomorrow on our show, it's the weekly New Hampshire News Roundup. Join us for that tomorrow morning, live at 9. This hour, preserving and reusing New Hampshire's old churches. And as we're learning, it's complicated. Send us an email, exchange@nhpr.org. Tell us what's happening in your community. Use Facebook or Twitter at NHPR Exchange or give us a call, 1-800-892-6477. 1-800-892-6477. With me in studio, Father George Dallaire, Vicar for Canonical Affairs at the Roman Catholic Diocese of Manchester. Also with us, Tom Mays, Vice President and Senior Counsel at the National Trust for Historic Preservation. He's author of the book, Why Do Old Places Matter? Also with us, Andrew Cushing, Field Service Representative for the New Hampshire Preservation Alliance. And gentlemen, lots of callers, but I did want to ask you, Tom, and maybe you, Andrew, as well, what are some of the easier adaptive reuses of church buildings that just can't be used for their congregations anymore? What's easy and what's not so easy?
Well, churches are reused for a whole host of things. And the first thing I think that people should look to is, what is the nature of the building and what is the use that fits the building really well? So we've seen a wide variety of things, from community art centers to restaurants to housing. Sometimes they're used as event spaces,
performance venues, theaters. Useful.
And sometimes those are actually combined with existing congregational use to help provide additional support for the congregation as it's trying to raise funds to support the building. So so I think there really is a wide variety of uses that are out there. One of the things that troubles me sometimes is when the use causes a lot of physical changes that change the character of the building or break up the spaces too much. So that sometimes can be very challenging. But I think Andrew will have some ideas also.
Yeah, that's interesting. And I'm imagining an old church used, for example, as a performance venue. That's great. So they can make some money. They can stay in the building, Andrew. But there's probably some changes they have to make if they're going to open up to the public as a music venue, or
sure.
Bathrooms, for example, or accessibility or whatever.
Yeah, and we in the preservation world would consider that kind of rehabilitation, right? Making a historic building fit modern needs. And I think we always at the Preservation Alliance approach the issue this way. And how does what does the community need? I think that's always a better question to start with. And certainly, then what can the building serve? So throughout the state, community theaters, we've seen some great stuff happening in Berlin at St. Kieran's, a former Catholic church, in Manchester, St. Anne's. And in Columbia, we have a former novitiate that's being converted into the Great Northwoods Committee on the Arts Center. So they're using the whole campus as an arts destination. And then even, you know, in Webster, we have libraries. In Brookline, there's also a church that's been converted into a library. So again, kind of looking at what does the community need and how can this church building serve that need?
Oh, I'm glad you mentioned what's happening just outside of Colebrook?
Just outside of Colebrook in Columbia.
Yeah, it's a huge campus, really, and it is being turned into North Country Arts Center. I think I visited it last year. There's a lot of really cool stuff going on there. So
yeah, now that then I think they're looking at bringing the blessing of the bikes back. Maybe Father,
which would
knows
be an appropriate
that.
Use. Yeah, Father Dallaire, talk about some of the uses that bring joy to your heart when you say, "Okay, I'm sad that this church closed, but I feel good that it is being used for X, Y, or Z purpose."
Well, I think for me personally, I think it's always nice to be able to preserve the historical nature and character of the buildings. Social services of one sort or another that, again, for us, for Catholics, that would have to be in keeping with the Catholic Church. I think that's probably the most practical way to look at it. Can the church be used for another expression of the mission of the church?
So you'd feel better if it were used for a charitable purpose or some sort of helpful purpose.
That is correct.
We looked into actually whether this issue has come up for New Hampshire's Jewish population, and we found out that the old synagogue in Nashua is now the Dental Connection. That's a dental clinic or referral office for low-income people, and there was a stipulation when they sold the building that it be used for a charitable purpose. So there's that, Father Dallaire.
So one of the things that we have to do, the Catholic Church ends up having to do in selling a property, is to try to guarantee that the new owner is going to be protecting the identity of the building and respecting what the building had been used for. So just as Andrew said from Laconia, there are a lot of personal histories established in churches.
Sure.
And so the thing was that in New Hampshire, although we, when we sell buildings, put deed restrictions, there's no way of protecting the deed restriction in civil law. So we put a deed restriction, but we can't defend it after it's in somebody else's hand.
Oh, and that's interesting.
And then maybe we can convince the new buyer to, you know, stay in keeping with what we believe, but then what do we do for the next buyer?
Sure, because sometimes, as we heard earlier, I think from Bartlett, these properties change hands more than once.
History takes place, and people don't forget. So part of the issue, for instance, in Epping, the Catholic Church sold a building to new owners who we didn't know but turned it into a pub. And although the people were happy to see their church stay, they were scandalized that the building was being used now in a manner that some of the patrons would be acting in ways that are not really in keeping with proper behavior.
So once it's sold, you don't have that much control.
We don't.
Try and use your moral authority. But beyond that, it is hard to say. Yeah, go ahead.
So it really becomes quite an issue.
Yeah.
Trying to protect the future purpose is a significant concern.
Sure. I know people were upset about the restaurant in Epping. Go ahead, Tom.
I just wanted to respond about not being able to protect buildings through civil law. Throughout the country, we do protect buildings using historic preservation easements, which do often also control uses of the property. So
often, but not always, because I know people were upset about some of the reuses.
Right. It depends on what the deed covenant says. So I would, you know, encourage the church, as it's selling a property, to look at those covenants and see whether it might work with the Preservation Alliance or some other entity to hold an easement that might be able to protect this building in perpetuity in an appropriate way.
Let's go back to our listeners, gentlemen, and to Keene, where Steve is on the line. Hi, Steve. Go ahead. You're on the air.
Hey. Oh, thank you. I got an interest in saving Catholic heritage, having been one of the members who threw in with the Ancient Order, the Hibernians, to save St. Anne's in Manchester, which was historic because the Know-Nothings went up the hill to burn it out. But I'm concerned with the removal of so much Catholic heritage, St. Charles in Dover, St. Peter Church in Peterborough, St. Joseph now. The Catholics were the first to diversify New Hampshire culture when they came over, and I have a deep concern that the removal of the buildings and the relics also removes the memory that this early opening up of New Hampshire culture benefited us. So I'm just questioning why the church seems to be doing the Know-Nothings work for them by, and I understand the need for branding and to protect the memory of each congregation, but I also would like to see more of these buildings repurposed for wholesome purposes.
Sure. Steve, thank you very much for the call. Father DeLair, I'm going to throw that to you really quickly. I feel like you've expressed it already that you would like to see these buildings remain as well, but they do need to fit the values of the church. That seems to be what you've been saying.
Well, there is also the economic reality of supply and demand. Buildings can be up for sale and people might not be interested. And so when we do have buyers that end up interested in purchasing the property, it does change the dynamic. It does change the dynamics. Some parishes become dependent upon the sale of some of their buildings in order to be able to continue.
Sure.
And having buildings unused that need to be winterized and so on become a tremendous burden.
So you may want to sell it and have the building remain, but if there's no buyer, what can you do?
The greater good of the parish community sometimes need to be served in such a manner that a building does need to be sold, because otherwise the long-term viability is just denied.
Well, and I love his point, Andrew, I'll throw this to you, that even for people who never attend church, these churches do remind us of our immigrant history.
Yeah, I think in Phil's case in Bartlett, that First Catholic Church in the White Mountains region was built because of a lot of railroad and logging immigrants from Irish and Italian and probably and some French Canadians. They banded together and they needed that spiritual home to make them feel, I guess, welcome in their community.
Well, thank you for the call, Steve. And let's go to South Danbury where Gail is on the air. Hi, Gail. Go ahead.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. I just want to weigh in and tell a little bit about the story of South Danbury, where the South Danbury Church, which is a congregational church, has been preserved through support from both the Preservation Alliance and LCHIP. And going beyond sort of spirituality or going beyond the needs of worshipers and going beyond needing a space to sort of define divinity in the community, the South Danbury Church, and I think that this is true of probably many, many small communities across New Hampshire and even beyond New Hampshire, really define the community. So way back when, South Danbury was a really bustling village, and it had a school and a store and a post office and a garnet sorting business and a very active rail station. And one by one, those things have gone away, but the church remains, and the church is now the one community gathering spot for the village of South Danbury. And so it becomes important not just for the worshipers, but for everyone in the community, is kind of giving them a sense of space and continuing to be an embodiment of the very identity of the village of South Danbury. And so that's another reason why it's really critical to preserve these kinds of spaces in communities across the state.
So, Gail, people still worship at South Danbury, but it's also used as a community meeting space.
Yes, worship every Sunday, but everybody in the community understands that this is our space. It's not just the congregational church space. We own this. This is ours. And people who really never cross the threshold on Sunday still identify with this building as this is mine.
All right. Well, Gail, it's great to hear from you. And let's get one more call in if we could. This is Zach and Keene. Go ahead, Zach. You're on the air. Welcome.
Hi, Laura. I'm the founder of Paragon Digital in Keene, and we acquired the former Grace Methodist Church in downtown Keene last year. It was built in 1876, and it's on the historic register. The New Hampshire Preservation Alliance had it on their 7-to-save list, and it sat empty for 10 years. I have as someone who's undertaking saving an old church right now, I just have a couple comments. One of them is just echoing what the previous caller from Laconia said. In addition to the cultural significance and the connection to the past, the architecture and engineering and craftsmanship that went into these buildings is amazing. Crawling around in the attic of this building is mind-boggling how they built it. and it was built to last hundreds of years, and they just don't build structures like that anymore.
So, Zach, you bought a Methodist church that had sat vacant for 10 years. What are you doing with it now?
We're going to move our marketing agency into the first floor.
Yeah.
And then figure out later what we'll do with the upstairs,
okay,
the big sanctuary.
And challenges for using a church as an office building, Zach?
The biggest challenge was energy efficiency.
Yeah,
I bet. The heating costs were just make it not a valuable space. So we're undertaking an energy retrofit and adding solar to the building.
Okay. Very interesting story. Tom, what do you think?
Well, I think the callers have really expressed how incredibly important these old churches are to the communities, and they've identified so many reasons I talk about in the book, the idea of community, the way they're icons of identity, the way people's memories are there, the way they're gathering places. All of these things are critically important, and they highlight just how significant these old church buildings are. I just urge everyone to continue the great work that we've heard about from the callers to work to save these old places and not lose them and suffer that grief reaction.
Well, we've gotten so much input from listeners. Did you want to jump in, Andrew?
Yeah, I just want to say I think Zach's point that sometimes it can take years to find a reuse strategy,
yeah,
especially
that
one that fits with
years.
The building. Yeah, and that was Zach's purchase of it came after a few other attempts to readapt the building. And so sometimes communities just need some time to digest the news and to find that proper use, because again, demolition is forever. And a few years of vacancy might just be the answer to get that proper use.
Here's an email from Pamela in Marlboro. The Federated Church in Marlboro recently installed solar panels on their community house. Earlier, they installed an elevator at their church. The Catholic Church in Marlboro is now a space for weddings and parties. The Dublin Catholic Church became a private home. Lots of people donated to the UCC in Keene for steeple repair fundraisers. And this person says, a grateful shout out to people who find ways to update and repurpose these buildings. Pamela, thank you very much for that call. And, you know, we're almost out of time, but I did want to ask you, Tom, how would you like listeners to view these structures now, Catholic or Protestant, or Jewish or mosques? How would you like listeners to view these structures that maybe they haven't thought about before?
Wonderful. Well, in my book, I actually write about the 14 reasons that old places matter to people. And sacredness is included as one of them. But there's so many others, and some of those words we've heard today on the call. We've heard identity, we've heard memory, we've heard the sense of continuity. But then there's also the sense of sustainability, the reuse of that craftsmanship, and also the way they form a central point for the community. And again, I just urge everyone to continue this good work of finding reuses for these buildings. As Andrew said, once they're gone forever. So keep up the good work to find these, find new uses for these old places that matter to people.
All right. All of you, thank you very much for being here. Tom, it was really nice to meet you. Welcome to New Hampshire.
Thank you. Happy to be here.
That's Tom Mays, Vice President and Senior Counsel at the National Trust for Historic Preservation. Father Dallaire, good to see you. Thank you for being here.
Thank you for inviting me.
That's Father George Dallaire, Vicar for Canonical Affairs at the Roman Catholic Diocese of Manchester. And Andrew, good to see you. Thank you for your time.
Thanks.
That's Andrew Cushing, Field Service Representative for the New Hampshire Preservation Alliance. This is The Exchange on New Hampshire Public Radio.
The views expressed in this program are those of the individuals and not those of NHPR, its Board of Trustees, or its underwriters. If you missed part of today's program, listen to The Exchange anytime at nhpr.org or subscribe to our podcast. Search Apple Podcasts, Google Play, or Stitcher for NHPR Exchange.